this week, the precious metals stealth rally gained momentum, with gold and silver finishing at nearly the highest point in a month on inflation fears. Welcome, everyone. Your host, Chris Waltzek, with two more guest interviews. Well, it's been said when your neighbor is searching for work, it's a recession. But when we are, it's a depression. So what's the term for when both you and your neighbor are in the same boat? According to some metrics, about 100 million able-bodied Americans are either unemployed, underemployed, or have simply given up looking for work. Dr. Paul Craig Roberts joins me, the former Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for Economic Policy, says the discrepancy is due to the fact that after just a few weeks of inactivity are no longer considered in the unemployment tally. The Bureau of Labor Statistics inflates the monthly figure by 100,000 to 200,000 jobs each time, he says. The true inflation rate may be twice or even three times the current level, and billions of dollars of paper shorts are being dumped on the gold futures market through the plunge protection team. Then, the president and founder of GoldSeek, Peter Spener, returns to the show with his favorite mining share picks. Several of his favorite candidates have had 500% returns recently. You'll want to stay tuned for all of his favorite stock candidates and their ticker symbols. Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest must-hear report. And we'd like to hear your questions and comments. The Q&A hotline, 641-715-3900, and our extension number, 514049, 641-715-3900, extension 514049. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with a market weather recap. Visibility virtually unlimited over the precious metals for the second week running, as investors preferred the safe haven over the declining greenback. Continued dovish comments from Fed policymakers amid robust economic growth numbers hinted at a Goldilocks-like environment for the precious metals. Gold added $18, 1.5%, finishing at $12.50, while silver picked up 33 cents, about 2%, ending the week at $17.75. The precious metals XAU shares ended at 1.5 points at 84, while black gold was off just $1.40, 3% around 48, with solid technical support below. The top story moving the precious metals higher, investors continue to view the Fed's hawkish moves, including the recent quarter point rate hike of the overnight lending rate, as a sign of impending inflation, as red-hot economic activity tends to signal higher prices. Fed Chairwoman Dr. Yellen's recent rhetoric indicates a cautious approach to rate hikes, however. The net impact is bullish for precious metals investors, as the markets appear to have discounted the effect of future rate hikes, focusing instead on the threat of the current political instability and a potentially overheating economy. On Friday, the St. Louis Fed President James Bullard noted that the improvement in the U.S. labor market is slowing, so it appears that officials may have a more cautious approach to rate hikes in the coming months. Precious metals, bottom line. The technical outlook for gold and silver continues to improve, while the XAU is starting to show some signs of slowing momentum. Clearly, dollar weakness is a positive sign for the metals, which continued in its multi-week swoon, dropping to the lowest level in nearly 5 months. If the metals hold support and overcome resistance, the next leg could send silver north of 21 and gold to around 1,500. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, cloudy skies rolled in above the New York Stock Exchange as investors preferred safe haven assets over equities amid political instability. By Friday's close, the Dow Jones Industrials fell 320 points, finishing at 20,600. The S&P 500 dropped 34, ending at 2343, while the NASDAQ was off 72, ending at 5828. And the Bitcoin ETF, GBTC, continued its decline, off 10 points to 108, down about 8%. In related news, stocks rolled over this week on the heels of disunity over the U.S. health care bill. According to one media source, the proposed bill will have a substantial impact on the financial sector, including the insurance and banking segments. The president demanded support for the health care bill in a do-or-die vote on Friday. However, Congressman Rand Paul pulled the bill from the floor, signifying a lack of unity in the party and putting the fate of the bill in question. Bottom line on equities. Well, the greed fear index plunged even further this week, suggesting that stocks could find a floor in the coming weeks and might be just a bit too early to call an end to the bull market. Coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio. We'd like for you to stay with us. Peter Spina, President CEO of GoldSeek.com, SilverSeek.com ranks in the top most viewed gold investor websites in the world, regularly on Investor's Business Daily, MarketWatch, Reuters, and eStreet.com. Welcome back.
Hi, Chris. It's great to be back.
Start off today with your interesting locale. You and your lovely wife, Vanessa, have moved, I understand, to the Eurozone, the EU.
We have. We are almost on our second year here in the Czech Republic. We're living in Prague, right in the heart of the city. A beautiful culture and history all around us. Also very rich with money and gold and silver in its history. East of Prague, there's a very famous silver mining district, which supplied 80-90% of the silver coinage hundreds of years ago into the European monetary system. And there's a lot of historic gold, silver, uranium mines, and mining is quite a large part of the history here. But we have moved back here. My parents are originally from ex-Czechoslovakia. They fled the communist system. But over the last 25 plus years, this place has been thriving with freedoms and a new era, a new golden era, which in the last several years has really gone to another level, and I really have a lot of hopes for the Czechs in the coming 5, 10, 25 plus years. They're in a very good position here with their economy and other items.
You mentioned some interesting stats, economic numbers on the Czech Republic.
Yeah, the country was industrialized quite heavily under the Austrian-Hungarian Empire, which ended after World War I, and Czechoslovakia became a new country. But under that later part of the empire, Bohemia, which is in the Czech area, was industrialized very heavily. So it was a key, actually a key asset for Hitler during World War II, the second largest munitions factory, and they make a lot of trams to planes to guns to all sorts of items today, and these are rich assets which led to the Czech Republic being the most industrialized nation in Europe today. About 47-48% of its economy is from industry. So they have a very strong export market, a lot of capital inflow. The wealth of the nation is accumulating, and they are in the EU, but they are not on the euro, which is a big question, whether it's going to be another 3-5 years. They have adjusted their currency, the Czech crown, to the euro at a 27-1 level, and that's been going on since 2013, which is also what the Swiss are doing or have done. And that has led to a lot of capital inflows. We've seen the 10-year Czech government debt go into negative territory, which is just absolutely amazing considering this is a communist country in total economic destitute 3 decades ago. So the capital inflows are very strong. The Czech National Bank is printing a lot of Czech crowns and buying euro debt with it. My personal view is that they're making a huge mistake, and that is that their Czech, the gold reserves have been declining to just a paltry level. I don't know how many ounces are left, but it's pretty much near zero. And this is a nation once that had one of the wealthiest per capita GDPs in the world before World War II. So the country is doing quite well, but I think if there's going to be another European crisis, which there's a lot of issues between the economics and politics, which is happening right now, and the question about euro and the debt, you know, the Czechs should be looking into gold, and I would want to help advocate that here at some point.
Well, with that type of economic growth, I mean, one would think they'd have a great opportunity to build up that gold stockpile and reserves.
They have something like $60-80 billion worth of euro bond debt. And this is for a nation of 10.5 million people. So they could have been buying a lot of gold with that over the last 3-4 years as they've pegged their currency to the euro. It's just caused some capital influxes. And, you know, you see the real estate market here was up 20% year over year, and it's still very cheap relative to the Western European market. So there's still a lot of opportunity here, and it is a wonderful place to be because there is a high energy, entrepreneurial energy here, and spirit of freedom and understanding what freedom is, because the older generation, especially if you're above the age of, say, 40, you have lived through some difficult times under the communist rule.
You also brought up remarkable results on some stock candidates. You mentioned at a show in Vancouver, was it?
Yeah, so in 2016, I do the January big Vancouver Resource Conference, and I like to talk about my gold market forecast and general forecast and give off some top stock picks. And last year, I gave five of them, which ended up returning on average 500% returns. One of the companies, Silvercrest Metals, went up from around 10 cents an eighth a share to over $4 a share. Other companies like gold mining, which was Brazil Resources, went from 39 to also over $3 a share. So there was some huge gains. And that was kind of the easy part, was bottom of this huge decline of the gold stocks, especially the junior gold stocks, which peaked back, I think, in 2011, and this steady downtrend. You know, many companies went down 80-90+%. So balance is overdue, and with a nice strong gold market, which we had last year for most of the year until the Trump election night, we had some really vibrant markets after such a difficult years. And I'm seeing that continuing, although, as we have seen, the volatility is quite extreme at the moment. And that's probably going to continue on into this year. So for gold investors, I think it's a good lesson over the last month. There's a lot of uncertainty and money flowing around. I think there's going to be another period, maybe two, where you can accumulate some more pullbacks in this market. But this year, I don't expect the same returns in the gold stocks. And I think the big difference between 2016 and 2017 is you got to be very selective in the companies. I think a lot of anything with the gold gold in it, mining and whatever, exploration took off. Now, to make the good returns and to beat the market, you're going to have to choose the right companies.
Plus, we have to look forward now, instead of maybe the next 6 to 12 months, you know, the next 3 to 6 years, on what hopefully will be at least a recovery from the market peak in 2011. 50-63% retracement of that level to build up for the next bull rally. Would you prefer to discuss the sector in general?
You know, I think in general, it's good to be looking at some of the mid-tier companies, the more well-known established companies. You can't go wrong with the royalty-based business models like Silver Wheaton, Royal Gold. If you're looking to lower your risk, because the gold stock sector is very risky, you know, the best way to be a gold investor and silver investor is to own the physical metal. And I think every gold-silver investor should do that. But yes, if you're looking and are willing to take higher risks and you go into the junior side, the GDXJ is a good basket of companies. On the specific companies, junior gold company in production that I think would be interesting, and I've came across at the San Francisco Gold and Silver Show in November and have been buying, and that's Northern Vertex Mining. They're going to be opening up a mine in Arizona. They're in the process of putting it into production. I think Q3, Q4 likely is the target of production. 42,000 ounces a year with high margins coming off of that. I think their all-in sustaining costs is under $700 an ounce. So they are moving along towards production. The company has a great location right outside of Vegas, I think, in 150 some miles or so, or yeah, close enough where you have, you know, great. It's a great location. I think investing in America right now is a lot more interesting. If Hillary had won the elections, mining in the United States would have had a lot more risk, and they were talking about other taxes or royalties. So now with Trump in office, yeah, I like investing in the United States right now. The prospects of, I think, the, you know, something like Northern Vertex is in a great position to make some good money. And they just announced some more cost cuts. So their rate of return on this project, I think now, is 60-70% at these gold prices. They've got a nice buffer if gold were to pull back. They're still going to make money off of this kind of mine, and they're doing exploration work to expand the mine life. And so I like that growth play and excitement, small junior company. The other one, which is a company that's changed their names from Brazil Resources, you may have recalled Amir Adnani interviewed. They've been taking on this business model, which worked very well for me as a gold investor, starting in the gold market, starting in the mid-90s. And until the gold market started to rally into the early 2000s, there were companies like Vista Gold, Seabridge Gold Resources, companies like Silver Standard, they were picking up assets for cheap as the bottom of the gold market properties were being sold for literally pennies on the dollar. So they became kind of like a leverage play on gold or silver. I remember Silver Standard had huge leverage at the bottom of the gold market per share of ounces. And today we have a similar kind of model being incorporated by Brazil Resources. So they've used the last several years to accumulate a huge position. Since I started looking at them about a year and a half ago, they have dramatically increased. They're looking at over 20 million ounces of gold equivalent ounces when you include their copper resources. They acquired a former Sunward Gold, which was IPO'd, I think, about 5 years ago, and I had looked at their project in Colombia. So Brazil had acquired this the late last year, and they're just continuing to advance this model and continue to add more and more ounces. So they have a lot of leverage to gold. If gold's going to make its big, big breakout, and if you look at the, say, a technical trend line on gold from 2011 till recently, you know, we're looking at 1250, 1275. If gold breaks above this level and you get this jump to 1400, 1500 plus gold in US dollar terms with a strong dollar, that's going to really take some of these companies off. And I think gold mining is going to be one of those companies.
We've heard from recently from Andrew McGuire, just a top-notch trader and decades of experience in the precious metal sector. He's on board with you. Well, he sees his fair value right now for gold around 1400 plus. As far as he's concerned, we should be looking for those numbers. What else is on your radar?
Well, the silver sector I like a lot in the coming years. Right now, I think it might be a bit too early, might lag gold, but there are some silver plays out there. Silvercrest Metals, as I mentioned, is a huge performer. They've come off their highs and they've raised capital, and I love investing in their teams. But they also have another company that your guests may be familiar with, which is Gold Source Mines. And Silvercrest team, some of the same individuals are involved with this company. It started in production several months now in Guyana, South America. High grade company ran into some production problems, putting in the first 1,000 tons of ore processing capacity. So right now the company lost its momentum. It went from a high of nearly 60 cents a share all the way down to almost like 12 or 13 cents in the last week. So I've been a big buyer of that one. I think they'll do very well. It's just a process of fixing, and it's, you see this a lot with mining, gold mining companies. They have a lot of excitement leading up to the production, and then you meet the challenges of actual production. Not all the time, but it does happen. I think with Gold Source, things are taking a little bit longer, and it's kind of, there's peak pessimism, and that's when I love to be a gold buyer, because you get really big discounts. They did a financing recently at 17 cents a share, I mean, with the last few weeks. So the stock's trading below that, and insiders were buying heavily into that. So I like to see that. But I think that one's an excellent investment into a mine, gold mine, that will continue to expand production. And also, you know, they had really good low cost, all-in sustaining costs on the initial mine plan. But then they're looking at changing it up. They're going to do some drilling work and look into actually expanding into a larger mine. So I think the next year or two looks really interesting for Gold Source, and it's cheap. And I love to buy distressed stocks like that.
Nothing like a good value. You've done your due diligence on several companies here. I am all ears, and I'm sure our listeners are as well, if there's anything else you find interesting.
I'm constantly hearing new companies and new stories. There seem to be new deals coming around, and there's merger and acquisition activity happening in the sector, and there's more cash coming into the sector, which is really a good sign that this longer-term bull market that we're entering into for the resource, the gold and silver resource side. So it'd be interesting to come in and talk about that another point, but I would say that sector could go either way right now. We could go and hit this downtrend line on gold and see it settle back under 1200 and build a stronger base and then make another attempt at another time. You never know. We may have one big more flush out below, but gold breaks through 1250, 1275, and we're off. And this, for me, that's the signal to go full in right now. I've probably reduce my position. So I'm sitting around 30-35% cash. So in case there is a pullback here, I'd love to be a buyer in that. I think that's always the most difficult part of being an investor, is having cash available to take advantage of the next opportunity.
If we knew exactly where the markets were headed, we would be all in, and we just don't. But we're starting to see some signs, as we were noting earlier and before the show, some resiliency in these markets, in this sector. And it's just great to have a mining expert. We have a void here in this sector. It sounds funny. It's called Gold Seek Radio, but we don't have a mining expert. So we're going to look forward to having you back on the show.
Chris, I look forward to being back and talking more about these different opportunities. I'm going to another conference in a couple of weeks in Zurich and to the Denver Gold Group forum there, getting a lot of updates. So I'd love to share some of the feedback I hear about various opinions that I come across there and other opportunities. And we'll maybe have a little better idea of how this gold market is going to come together for the rest of the year. So it'll be a great time to do an update.
Sounds very good. Peter Spina in the Czech Republic, and giving us perspective not only geographically, but on the mining sector. It certainly sounds good. We're going to look forward to having you back on the show.
All right, Chris. As they say in Czech, děkuji moc za nashledanou. Thank you very much, and I look forward to speaking with you again soon.
Gold Seek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Former Assistant Secretary of the Treasury, Economic Policy in the Reagan Administration, and former editor, columnist for the Wall Street Journal Business Week, Scripps Howard News Service. Just a pleasure to welcome back to our show today, Paul Craig Roberts. You are not terribly pleased, I think, with the state of the economic situation here domestically. Neither are most of our listeners.
Well, Chris, for a number of years now, the economic information we get from the government and from the financial media is fake news. For example, we're told we have an unemployment rate of 4.7%, which essentially is full employment. And yet we see no inflationary pressures that always in the past have accompanied full employment. But we don't see any growth in real consumer demand or real retail sales that normally accompany full employment. And I could go on giving these examples. Where did this full employment number come from? It comes from the fact that the government simply doesn't count the unemployed any longer. If you have not looked for a job in the last 4 weeks, you're not counted. So we have this huge number of discouraged workers who've looked for a job for months, maybe for years. They can't find a job. They cease looking, and therefore they are no longer considered part of the workforce. So the way they got this low number is simply by not counting the unemployed workers. John Williams of ShadowStats.com, an expert on the official figures, continues to count unemployment the way it used to be counted when I was in the Treasury. He says the unemployment rate currently in the United States is 23%, and yet the government says it's 4.7%. Now, I believe John Williams. I don't believe the government. We're also told every month that there are all these jobs created, 150,000, 200,000, and so on. That's all we ever hear. What we don't hear is that even the jobs that are claimed to be created are, for the most part, part-time, poorly paid jobs that do not support an independent existence. We also are not told that these job figures, for the most part, consist of an add-on factor that the Bureau of Labor Statistics uses to estimate the difference between unreported job losses from business failures and unreported new jobs from recent business startups. And the way they go about estimating this, John Williams says, adds 100,000, maybe as much as 200,000 jobs to the monthly figures. So on occasions, the monthly figure consists entirely of this add-on factor. So wherever you look at the job information, you can't have any confidence in it. Then we move to inflation. Anyone who buys anything knows we have a high rate of inflation in everything, food, clothing, hardware, items, wherever you go. The government says that we have essentially a zero inflation rate. How do they get that zero rate? Well, they get it because they have altered the way they measure inflation. They've done two things. One, the basket of goods, the weighted basket of goods that they use to compute the inflation index. If an item in that basket goes up in price, they throw it out of the basket and substitute a lower priced item. So the measure of inflation is no longer consistent with a constant cost of living. It reflects a declining standard of living because they are substituting less good products for better products that rise in price. Another thing they do, they say that price increases are not really price increases, they are quality improvements. And the price went up because the quality went up. But of course, for the consumer, it's still a price increase. And they overuse this. So between the so-called substitution effect of putting in a lower priced item for one that goes up in price and calling a price rise a quality improvement, they get zero inflation. To stop spending money on Social Security cost of living adjustments, there have been hardly any. And yet, everyone can see prices are going up. So Dave Kratz and I have proven consistently over and over is that the gold price is manipulated by the sale of uncovered shorts in the futures market. It's a way of printing paper gold. Just like the Fed prints paper dollars, the bullion banks, that is the Federal Reserve's agents in the gold and silver futures market, they can print futures contracts that are not covered and dump them in huge amounts in the market and drive down the future price of gold, because the price of gold is determined in the futures market where you can create all the paper gold you want. It's not determined in the bullion market where people actually take possession of real gold and silver. And then we come to the other financial assets. Well, the Federal Reserve has made no mystery of the fact that it controls the price of bonds because it's prepared to buy as many bonds as it needs to keep the interest rate where it wants it. But what the Federal Reserve doesn't tell us is that they now have a complete trading desk. They can trade anything. They can dominate trade in any market. Stocks, commodities, currencies, and no one explains why they have this power or what they are doing with it. For example, do they keep the stock market up by buying every time a correction begins? S&P futures, how do they go about keeping the dollar up? Is it because they can encourage the European Central Bank and the Japanese Central Bank to print massive amounts of euros and yen to offset the increase in U.S. dollars so the exchange rate doesn't vary? What about commodities? What are they doing there? There's no investigation. There's no reporting. The Congress doesn't even ask. And yet, it is a fact that the Fed has a trading desk and can trade anything. And as the Fed has no financial limits whatsoever. It can create all the money it wants, endless amounts. It has nothing to worry about. Losses don't mean anything. They just push a button and up jumps another $1 trillion. In that type of a situation that I have described, this is just a brief description, could go on for days. What is the meaning of what we're told about the economy? It's fake news. No one knows what the real situation is on the basis of the information provided by the government and the financial press.
Obviously, you've pointed out that we're looking at 20 to 23% unemployment. Given the shadow stats current number, that's way off of the official Labor Department numbers, and there is a discrepancy there. Can you give us an idea, though? When is the check due? As you say, they have carte blanche authority to print fiat money, but at some point, we reach that tipping point, don't we?
Wall Street, the hedge funds, they all like making money in the stock market. Why would they blow a whistle if the Fed is supporting stock prices? They're happy, just as people were happy that they're supporting bond prices. If the Fed is able to sustain the dollar's exchange value by encouraging quantitative easing in the European Central Bank and the Japanese Central Bank, both of which are engaged in quantitative easing, then any growth in the supply of dollars is matched by growth in yen, the growth in euros, and therefore the exchange rates don't turn against the dollar. So I don't know what tips it. It's not clear. I didn't think it could go on anywhere near as long as it has gone on. But it goes on, and not only does it go on, there's essentially no discussion of it. You can't find any discussion in the financial media. You can't find any interest on the part of Congress. How is it we have a booming stock market when there's no growth in real retail sales? How is it we have a booming stock market when the real median family income has been declining? Where do these profits come from?
I'm sure you'd agree that much of this phantom growth we've seen in U.S. equities is a direct result of these artificially low rates that you've written extensively about. Of course, that enables our corporate officers to issue very low interest debt, parlay those funds into purchasing their own shares.
That's just what happens, yeah. And not only do the corporations borrow to buy back their own stock, thus driving up the performance bonuses of the executives, and of course, based on capital gains for the shareholders, but all the money the Fed poured into the banks to support their balance sheets, you know, all of their bad derivatives, that money the banks use to buy stocks and collect dividends. It works for the big players. And as long as it works for the big players, one has to expect it will continue to work.
Do you think our policymakers are focusing on the 150 or so million Americans who have exposure to U.S. equities primarily through corporate drip programs where a portion of their salary goes into mutual funds or related corporate shares, the self-fulfilling momentum that might keep this going? But again, the music stops at some point, we presume.
Well, you know, numerous pension funds are in trouble. Private pension funds. State and municipal pension funds. We're told that most pension funds, corporate pension funds, whatever they are underfunded. So what is the explanation for that? If the stock market's doing so good, how come everything's underfunded? Is the stock market performance limited to a handful of stocks that the Fed can focus on? What are the major stocks? They're all high-priced, Apple, Google, that sort of thing, isn't it? There is an inconsistency between so many pension funds being underfunded and in trouble. In fact, the other day, one of the Teamsters funds in New York collapsed. So if the stock market's doing so good and the economy so well, why are the pensions in trouble? There's also concern about the financial condition of insurers, because they've had no interest income the bond part of their portfolios for a long time. Of course, if they go down, the Fed can do the same thing for them that they did for the big banks. They can buy whatever the insurance companies have or don't have and supply the funds to them. So we just don't know. What has happened, normally when a central bank expands the money supply, it finds its way into the economy and drives up prices. Or it drives down the exchange value of the currency. But our recent experience, the money has gone into the price of financial assets and driven up stock and bond prices. So if that's where the money goes, then it doesn't have the same effect in producing the high rates of inflation or the hyperinflation that is traditionally associated with massive money creation. So one assumes that this sort of thing can continue. What people don't seem to understand, Chris, is that this type of behavior by the Federal Reserve is new. It's not the way the bank behaved in the past. The Fed has learned essentially that there are no constraints on its action and that it can rig any and all markets. And that's the big difference. And so everyone who thinks in traditional ways expect all this to come to an end, like I did. But once you realize what's really going on, you wonder, well, how does it come to an end? Some sort of political crisis. Maybe they're going to remove Trump. Maybe the pressure Washington puts on Europe for conflict with Russia will cause Europe to abandon NATO. Maybe Marine Le Pen will win the French presidency and join Britain in pulling out of the EU. And these major kinds of things can upset the ability of Washington to rig everything. So there could be some major political development where we lose control. Maybe some sort of conflict with Russia and China in which we get kicked hard and lose. These are the type of things that are more likely.
I wonder, though, if perhaps some of this is a direct result of the U.S. dollar having been under pressure for, you know, so many years. It's a relative value compared to, obviously, the euro, as well as perhaps the yen and the yuan, where we see negative rates. I mean, 3.7% at the People's Bank of China. That can make our abysmal 1%-ish overnight lending rate very compelling.
The central banks acting under Fed leadership can rig the situation any way they want it. There's no one questioning them on this or asking about it or even mentioning it. Fake news determining everything. So there's a matrix and people are in the matrix. And as long as the news is good, they're happy. And you know, really, why did the stock market go up 1,000 points? Because Trump got elected. There's no explanation of that. There was no sudden increase in the growth of consumer incomes or retail sales or the profits of firms. And according to all the financial analysis, Trump was elected, the market was supposed to fall. That was the prediction. So it seems to me that we are facing a different type of world in which the market is neutralized and the ability of market to value things is all set by the power of central banks.
Could you give us your expectations eventually? There must be a confluence of negative events. Are you envisioning a hyperinflation or a galloping inflation like we saw in the 1970s?
Oh, what I'm envisioning is a conflict with Russia and China that's being engineered by the CIA and the military security complex and the media. The kind of reckless provocations of Russia from the extraordinary demonizations of Russia, of Russia's president, the constant lies about Russian behavior. As President Putin himself said, the Americans have destroyed our ability to trust them. This is the biggest change in my lifetime. During the entirety of the Cold War, both governments worked to reduce the tensions. And it was the legacy of that work that let Reagan and Gorbachev end the Cold War and removed nuclear Armageddon as a possibility. But what has happened with the Clinton, George W. Bush, and Obama regimes is to raise these tensions to a level many times higher than they ever were during the Cold War.
Is America being set up the way the globalists really brought the entire center of Europe? Are we being similarly set up?
The whole world is being set up by the desperation with which the American military security complex is protecting its annual $1 trillion budget. And by the ideology of the neoconservatives who have a goal of American hegemony over the entire world. That is setting up the life of the planet. That is the real threat. It's far beyond any economic problem. Trump, who was unique in saying that he would reduce the tensions with Russia and normalize the relations, immediately came under full-scale assault. John Brennan at the CIA, from Comey at the FBI, from the New York Times, a CIA asset, from the Washington Post, a CIA asset, from CNN, a CIA asset, and they're trying to drive him into the ground and force him off the agenda of normalizing relations with Russia because they need the threat to justify the $1 trillion annually they get from the American taxpayers. This is essentially the overriding issue of our time. All the other issues are of no significance. This is what people have to understand. The nuclear weapons that we dropped gratuitously on the two Japanese cities are pop guns compared to the thermonuclear weapons of today. To risk a confrontation between nuclear powers, as the United States is bent on doing, is to put the existence of life on planet at total risk. There's nothing said about this. No one is aware.
Thank you, Dr. Paul Craig Roberts.
Okay, you're welcome, Chris.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the 8th largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their RIA project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
This is Robert Ian with the GoldSeek.com radio. A media source I must admit I have been out of touch with for a while, but have a great respect for, is the founder, executive chairman, and now retired CEO of C-SPAN, Brian Lamb. The first interview I ever saw of his was in the early days of C-SPAN, from the late 1980s on Book Notes, that focused on, at that time, the new chairman of the Federal Reserve, Alan Greenspan. Brian Lamb's current weekly interview show called Q&A just had an author and topic that proved most insightful. Sandra Navidi, a global financial consultant, talked about her book Superhubs, how the financial elite and their networks rule our world. She worked with and has a foreword written by Nouriel Roubini. She posed an interesting question by asking if the financial leaders of the world are prisoners of the system, or do they hold the system prisoner? Are the problems we face their fault, the system's fault, or both? She believes these super hubs of power have disabled self-correcting mechanisms within the financial system, which is why almost none of these leaders saw or anticipated the 2008 crisis until it was upon us. Increasing financialization, fueled by debt, with lots of transaction shuffling and very little money going into the real economy, is, was, and remains at the heart of what ails the global economy. It was a fascinating conversation, where she discussed the individuals who have major influence in the global economic system, and specific gatherings, such as the World Economic Forum, held annually in Davos, Switzerland, that they attend. She's been attending Davos since 2007, where about 2,500 people attend each year, and the company cost to participate is 500,000 Swiss francs, which is about $500,000. She discussed her view on personality traits of financial leaders like Jamie Dimon, Donald Trump, George Soros, Bill Gross, Ben Bernanke, John Merriweather, and many others. Her analysis of what she's been hearing from within the closed halls of the world's financial planners is both illuminating and alarming. If I were to paraphrase her comments, she believes there is uncertainty at the highest levels of world finance. She believes the entire system has become more fragile since the 2008 crisis. That fragility can trigger failure, at any time and from any source. Could the trigger be an overvalued stock market? Yes. Could it be interest rates? Yes. The challenge is, it could be anything. She discussed how the stock market is a psychological indicator that manifests the herd instinct and does not reflect real fundamentals, and how one should be wary of it as an indicator. She discussed how that herd mentality can turn in the opposite direction without warning, creating a false, reinforcing downward spiral, leading to panic, where no one lends money, a bank run ensues, and illiquidity leads to insolvency. She strongly hinted that the trigger for such a cascade of events could be political instability anywhere in the world. The uncertainty in the air that she encountered at her first 2007 Davos meeting has returned. How that will manifest itself this time around remains to be seen. The important question is, what are you going to do with this information? Because one of the best ways to conquer change is to anticipate the future and act on it in advance. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at ConquerChange. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week. The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned, with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their RIA project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond. Your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice. GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Thank you.